WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
There's a note that former presidential advisor Pat Buchanan wrote to Richard Nixon in 1969, urging him not to meet with the widow of Martin Luther King in Atlanta because many people, quote, believe Dr. King was the devil incarnate, end quote. This document can be found in the National Archives. My guest today is the archivist of the United States, Don Wilson. He oversees more than 3.5 billion documents that include things such as John Ehrlichman's doodles of Nixon, the Watergate tapes, Lyndon Johnson's Cadillac, the Army papers of the Vietnam War, genealogical records, Indian treaties, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and millions of feet of film. The records of the national government used to travel from capital to capital in the early years of the U.S. Franklin Roosevelt saw the importance of preserving these documents, so in 1934 he established a National Archives in Washington, D.C., and he appointed an archivist. In 1949, the Hoover Commission removed the independent agency status of the archives and put it under the auspices of the General Services Administration. This was for reasons of efficiency, but during this time the archives were seen as merely old documents to be stored, and they were not properly tended to, so many things were lost or damaged. In 1985, President Reagan restored the National Archives to its initial status as a private agency, and in 1987 he appointed Don Wilson to be archivist, a lifetime appointment and the first presidential appointee of the National Archives since 1949. Wilson's an historian who's worked in several of the presidential libraries around the country. The business of deciding what to keep or not is of both historical and political importance. Wilson sees his job and that of the National Archives as an honest broker of history. I asked him to amplify a bit.
Well, that it should be non-political, it should be non-partisan, and it should be based on a secretariat kind of activity that takes the record-keeping out of the political specter.
How much repair to the National Archive did you have to do after the GSA had run it? I understand that because it was just viewed as kind of a giant garage and warehouse, there wasn't much attention paid to preservations of documents and paintings and so forth.
Well, we have developed a 20-year preservation program, and we are undertaking a very long-term preservation program, and part of it is the physical facilities itself, and I think the new building coming in the next 4 or 5 years will rectify the need for housing, particularly the modern materials such as film, videotape, electronic records, that we simply don't have the facilities to house at this point.
Did you go through the National Archives when you took over and went, oh my gosh, how could they have let this happen to this material?
Indeed. I, having spent most of my career in presidential libraries, which are bright and shiny and new and lots of space, I was somewhat shocked, particularly when I got to the preservation lab and particularly the chemistry lab, which was in an old janitor's closet. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment in this awful facility, and people just stacked on top of one another. So that was quite a shock for me.
Do you have problems with like mice in the National Archives?
Well, we have a few problems in the garage area, in the moat area underneath, yes.
The moat?
Well, we call it the moat, but it's the driveway.
Uh-huh.
And it goes under the building for the loading dock and area that there are... We have problems with rodents at night.
So do you set out traps or...
Yes, and they don't get into the facilities itself. It's just the more damage probably to our vehicles than anything.
Now, I imagine presidential papers are a highly political issue. I mean, for instance, all the Watergate papers, the material from the Nixon administration has been subject to a great deal of litigation. Richard Nixon has wanted to use executive privilege to keep a lot of things secret, private. And I understand that you, as archivist, has to pass judgment on this?
Well, under the presidential or the congressional law passed in 1978 or 77, which, 74, I'm sorry, took the records away, created a new situation, and it's the first time that the presidential records were no longer considered personal property, and that's been a long and involved struggle. And then the question was that the Watergate material itself should be processed first and opened initially, and so that's caused a lot of the litigation. We haven't had that situation in other presidential papers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The United States has a policy of declassifying many documents after a certain period of years and making them accessible to researchers, which is not always the case in other countries. There was a British author who wrote a book on British intelligence was prescribed from researching British archives. It was able to find much of the material he needed in our national archives. And when he published his book, Britain tried to suppress that. Do you ever get much pressure from foreign countries to control what kind of information people have access to?
Well, we actually try to take the lead as much as possible. We are by far the most open society in the Western world, and we take great pride in that, and I think one of the responsibilities of the National Archives is to provide access as soon as is reasonably possible. We have basically a 30-year rule. Some materials are open much sooner than that. Others can be exempted if it can be shown a very strong reason, foreign policy or otherwise, that it should be. But we do take some criticism from time to time, but I don't think we have anything that would be seriously challenged there, and we've worked pretty well with some of the countries. In fact, we try to encourage them to open sooner. Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that that comes up often is how an American citizen can have access to a government document that is classified. And one of the programs I understand you're developing is a means of so-called sanitizing documents with digital imaging. In other words, sort of photographing them with the computer's digital images and then and then taking out what is classified?
Well, we don't take out anything. It's the agency itself that handles all the classification, and we are only the person who either says a request that it be declassified or we receive a declassified copy. While we hold classified materials, we only have the authority to declassify from the agency itself.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do the act of classification or...
So you aren't the ones who put the black marks
no,
through the photocopies?
Not. We uh-huh. hopefully are the ones, in some cases, who take it out, but only with stipulated guidelines from the agencies. They, until they're 30 years old, really have control over whether that material is declassified or not, unless it comes through another source of an executive order or something. Then we can take action.
Why 30 years?
Well, that's,
what is the 30-year rule?
Well, the 30-year rule really is the rule that says once a record has been in existence 30 years, it then comes under the control of the archivist and is taken over by the archives unless the agency can show a reason or agreement is reached that this would still be involved in some way in a national security activity or would have damaged international affairs.
Who was able to go into the National Archives and take a look through the letters of Abraham Lincoln or the Kennedy papers or to take a look at some of the trial evidence from the Nuremberg trials? Can anyone just go in and apply and examine these objects?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available to all people. Citizens of the country and in the presidential libraries and in the regional archives.
What breaks your heart to have learned has been lost from the archives or been stolen?
Oh, I think that the most serious thing is it's unfortunate that we lost so many materials prior to the archives being established, and papers were kept in such haphazard condition in records in various forms. Andrew Jackson papers, for example, were lost in the fire at the Hermitage, and other Lincoln papers sold off and by the heirs, and some purposely destroyed because they weren't under archival or government control. So we have lost many portions of our history. We, you know, had it not been rescued in time, we would have probably lost the original Declaration.
How did that happen?
Well, it was very prominently displayed. It was in the custody of several agencies from time to time, and often displayed, and nobody was particularly aware of the need for conservation or how it was sunlight and other factors would work over time to destroy the document itself. And so when it was transferred to both to the Library of Congress and then transferred to the National Archives in 1951, it has been great pains have been taken to maintain no further deterioration in the Constitution and in the Declaration.
Well, I understand the Declaration of Independence was actually missing for about 140 years.
Well, I'm not sure missing, but I'm not sure that everybody knew exactly where it was.
Well, glad that it's back, and
yes.
It was under helium, I guess it is.
It is encased, and all oxygen or any damaging materials is kept from it, and we monitor it very closely and can tell if there's any damage at all being done to it.
Well, a lot of documents are now being produced electronically on computers being kept on tape. How are you able to preserve some of this information, which is now so easily changeable? I would think this is an easy way for a government employee, an official, to maybe hide what it is it's been doing just by changing the nature of an electronic document.
Well, it's interesting, and it's a very serious problem, and one that we're really going to have to face over the years, because all agencies are moving more and more into the electronic area, businesses as well. We're losing, not only in the federal government, but through states, through private business, all forms of material being kept on electronic records, and the lack of standards, the lack of any way to really safeguard this, or even have a whole system wiped out by a magnetic field. It's not a very stable environment either. What we have found in most of our surveys at this point, and in the studies that we have done, is that the high-level policy material still is being printed out, or is in hard copy form. So I think that while the danger does exist in the future, I don't think we at this point have lost significant documentation.
Some of the documents that have surfaced in the Iran-Contra matter pertaining to Oliver North and John Poindexter, weren't these saved, in part the backup saved, as part of an archival program that Ronald Reagan had instituted?
Yes, in fact, they were. There were ways to retrieve that, and it actually goes into the system permanently. And it's not as easy to purge these as some people might think, although when they go more and more to independent systems and to disk activities, and it's going to be not only more difficult to ensure that they're saved, but it's also going to be more difficult to really know exactly what all's going on throughout a particular network.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you heard Oliver North say, when congressmen were startled he'd been shredding documents, he said, well, that's what they provide shredders to us for. Did that sort of tear you up as a historian, knowing that all this rich material was going out in the burn bag?
Well, I can recall being out in Michigan and seeing it on the evening news, and I said, oh, I hate to hear that. It does, as a historian, really, or as an archivist, it worries you unless that they have been given approval to do so.
Mm-hmm. If an efficiency expert came to you and said, look, you're keeping entirely too much paper here. This is just too much. How would you justify to this efficiency expert why the National Archives is important?
I'm not sure. I would disagree that we're keeping too much, because I think we probably are. And particularly with the volume of information that's being produced today. However, I would say that without adequate documentation, without these records, we lose a very vital part of what democracy is all about. And that is having the actions, the documentation, the knowledge, and the accountability of what this government has done and what the people have asked and how the people function. And if we don't have that, as we have seen in some other countries, you lose a central part of the whole democratic purpose.
You know, I'm reminded of a scene in George Orwell's 1984 in which Winston is, his job is to be in this giant room, some sort of a British archives of a kind, changing history, rewriting it, having people disappear and come back in again. All the time. Are you conscious of some kind of a standard toward truth in your work?
Absolutely. I think that's very critical. And without it, we're in very deep trouble. I think we have seen that Orwellian activity go on in other countries with the disappearance and reemergence of certain leaders, and the complete unavailability of documents. I think it's interesting that in the USSR, that the archives of the Soviet Union was under the control of the KGB until about 10 years ago. That, to me, is a very significant aspect of what freedom is about.
Have you do you find yourself collecting items throughout your life? Is your bedroom dresser cluttered with items you want to save? Or are you somebody who likes to throw things out?
Well, by and large, I throw things out, or at least my wife does. But we do. We don't save historical materials as such. Nor domestic historical materials. We have, been in a situation where we've moved quite a bit, and we have limited how much we save of any certain things. She finally threw away my college notes, I think, on the move before last.
Which did that pain you to toss them out?
It did pain me to toss those out, yes.
Henry Kissinger sent his 15,000 pages of typescript of his phone conversations to the Library of Congress rather than to the National Archives. Why did he do that?
Well, I don't know as I have the answer to the motivation. I think the question then was raised at the time was whether the archivist... the whole broader question of who determines what a record is, and the legal opinions of the time indicated that Kissinger, as head of that agency for the State Department at the time, could determine whether it was a record, a duplicate record, or whatever. And they indicated that these were personal papers, and he could put them where he wanted to put them.
So this made them then beyond the reach of the Freedom of Information Act?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Is there much rivalry between the National Archives and the Library of Congress about what kinds of material gets stored there?
I think over the years there's been some concern or cross purposes, but I know that certainly with this in the last 2 years that I've been involved, we have taken some major steps to rectify those areas of where we collect, and Dr. Billington and I have had several meetings, in fact, and have launched a number of cooperative programs. We both know and realize that we can't begin to do it all, and wherever we can assist one another, we will. So I think the lines are being drawn more clearly where there has been confusion, and I wouldn't call it rivalry as much as trying to straighten out and work together in determining who should best have it.
Did it bother you when the transcripts of Henry Kissinger went to the Library of Congress rather than the National Archives?
Well, I think as a policy matter, it created a great deal of concern. As at the point I was director of the Ford Presidential Library, it caused me even more concern because I wanted to complete the record there.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we did have an arrangement made between Dr. Kissinger and the Librarian of Congress, and with the assistance of President Ford, that copies of the relevant Ford for the Ford years are being made available to the Ford Library, so that record will be complete.
It seems
in a sense we're getting it back into the National Archives then.
And then one day will also be accessible.
That's right.
To us all.
That's right.
Do you ever just sort of wander around the National Archives, poking into drawers and seeing what's there?
I wander around and talk to staff and find out who is there, as well as what is there. Yes, I do. I don't do it as often as I'd like, because as a historian, I would have... one of my favorite places to go, for example, is in the still pictures, and to look at some of those early Brady photographs and some of the Civil War materials, and it's just fascinating, and one could spend literally days there.
What startled you the most to learn was in the National Archives?
Startled me the most, perhaps, I think once I knew it, was I think maybe the captured German records and the OSS materials, and particularly the captured German records and how they came, and what a fascinating collection that really is.
Is in some of those German materials?
Well, they include rosters of the inmates at concentration camps in Nazi Germany, hundreds of photographs of concentration camps, which were used as evidence in the war crimes trial at Nuremberg, which is how we ended up with the material. Also, we have a lot, more than 30 photograph albums belonging to Eva Braun, showing Hitler in a more informal setting. I these are fascinating materials that it's amazing that they have been, you know, saved and preserved and available to us.
I understand that one of the most popular items that people order from you is a photograph of Elvis Presley shaking hands with Richard Nixon.
That's what I understand. It's been very popular.
So people just send in a note and say, we'd like this photograph?
That's correct.
Was there any other account of the meeting between Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon?
Not to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. I think there was probably an appointment schedule book on it, but the main interest is the photograph itself.
I remember one of the facts that came out during the recollection of the Kennedy assassination was that President Kennedy's brain had been kept in the National Archives and then has disappeared. How could something like that happen?
Well, I don't know as it's disappeared. Uh-huh. I think that the case is that it was removed for other purposes. But it was really never in the National Archives. I think that was part of the whole question of some of the autopsy materials and other things. But it really was never put in the National Archives itself.
So then it can't have disappeared from it, I guess.
No,
then.
That's right.
Does anyone know where it is?
Not to my knowledge.
It's kind of like the Declaration of Independence, kind of just around somewhere.
Or why should we, maybe?
Yeah. Good question. Except that for a historian, it might be of interest.
Well, I think the record would be. I'm not sure the physical specimen would be.
I know a number of curators of museums often put, you know, paintings from the permanent collection into their office. What do you have from the National Archives on display in your office?
Well, interestingly, I have one of the items is a painting of FDR, because the office was restored a number of years ago to the 1930 period. And so one of the paintings, large paintings that covers the wall from the Franklin Roosevelt, is from the Roosevelt Library. And they kindly permit me to use it in the office itself. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we don't have a large, significant number of items in there.
I was interested in looking through a book of items that the National Archive has to see, for instance, a draft of Franklin Roosevelt's speech to the Congress declaring war on Japan, which had, for instance, December 7th, 1941, a day which will live in world history, with world history scratched out and an infamy written in above it. This must be one of the pleasures for you as a historian, to be around these pieces of paper, these photographs, these watercolors that show you how people were thinking and behaving at a different time.
Oh, definitely. And I think in the case of many of these items, for example, in the Eisenhower, we have many original Churchill letters that were often edited or personal comments on them. Eisenhower's own speeches where he would edit, as well as President Ford and others that I have personally seen. To make those available, to show them to students, then, I mean, it's really a laboratory, because the student, whether at college or high school, can come in, look at these original materials, and it's not just Eisenhower. It comes alive to them.
It's more
see
than
the
just,
original documents, right?
And it's not just looking at an inner office memo. I mean, these are the recollections of people's thoughts
in their
doodles at the time.
And, in their handwriting, yes.
How long is your term? You're appointed by the president, right?
Yes, appointed by the president, but under the independence law, it's kind of a unique appointment in that I can be removed by the president, but the reasons for such removal must go to both houses of Congress, kind of an implied life term.
Implied life term, rather than like a limit of 10 years or something.
That's right. There is no limit on the term itself.
Uh-huh. So does this give you a feeling of comfort, of ease, of not being subject to political pressure then?
That was the intent, and it certainly does. I think it there's really a feeling of they know me. There is not a sense of mistrust or concern that there's going to be any kind of political favoritism one way or the other, and I think that's the balance that the archives needs and should have, and in dealing with the agencies as well.
There are a couple of different sayings on top of the National Archives. One is, I think, study the past, and the other is the past is prologue to the present.
Yes.
Would you consider adding a third to that, that says that the National Archives are everything the government wants to save that won't get it into trouble?
I wouldn't put that in there because I think it's we save, and what is determined to get them in trouble or not get them in trouble is usually judged generations away, and I don't think we could even determine that at this point.
And that's the point of having the archives, is that
absolutely
generations hence will make these decisions,
judgments and determinations, and let the record speak for itself.